Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. How are my loyal listeners? Thank you for your continued support. And as always, hit that subscribe button, everybody. We have an amazing show for you, because boarding the mothership is Kadeem Hardison. You know him as Dwayne Wayne in A Different World. He now plays Arlo in Moonhaven. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Hardison. Thank you for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Thank you.
The honor is 100% mine, sir.
No, it's mine.
Thank you so much. So I always start off with a question of inspiration. So who were your earliest influences and what inspired your love of acting?
Oh, wow. Earliest influences. I guess going back to the early, as a kid, I watched a lot of television. And then my first movie idol was probably Bruce Lee. Mm. And television-wise, it was Jackie Gleason, Art Carney, Tony Randall, Jack Klugman. Like, those were my shows, like The Odd Couple and The Honeymooners. I lived in New York, so 11:30 at night when I was supposed to be asleep, I could turn on Channel 11 and have an hour of laughs right before I fell asleep. And then I think around the late 70s, Starsky and Hutch hit. And that's when I knew I want to do that. I want to pretend to have a different life and chase the bad guys or the good guys. And at the end of the day, nobody's getting hurt. There's no real gunfire. There's, you know, have cool conversations with my partner riding in the car. And, and comic books helped also. They kind of expanded my imagination, and I loved reading comics because I could make all the voices, and it was action. It was all about expanding your imagination as far as you could go. But it pretty much started, you know, Bruce Lee was a huge influence. Muhammad Ali was a huge influence. Eddie Murphy was probably, once I got in my, you know, teenage years, Eddie Murphy was the guy. He created the not even doorway. He created the freeway for all of us to come and ride on and come in. So, yeah.
Now I read your mother is Beth Ann Hardison, who was a pioneering runway model and who advocated for diversity in the fashion industry. So absolutely. She was already in her own way a celebrity as well. So when you said you wanted to be an actor, what was her opinion? Was it be careful of Hollywood? Was it go for it? Bigger dream, the better?
Yeah, well, shoot. She was pushing me from the time I was 6 or 7. Like, what do you want to do with your life? I don't know, 6 years old. You know, but you got to know what you want to do with your life. And to get her off my back, I was like, I want to be Spider-Man. She was like, okay, you want to draw Spider-Man? You want to be Spider-Man? And I was like, I can't really be Spider-Man. I'd fall. So yeah, let me draw Spider-Man. So then she put me in art school. And then I saw that, yeah, I'm not as good as these other kids. Let me be Spider-Man. And she was, all right. And she sent me to acting school. And then it stuck. It was like, once I got up there, and started, you know, doing it for real, and then realized I used to watch a lot of television, and I always thought I would have did that different, and that let me know that I was on to something. You know what I mean? I felt like I could have did that. I could have did that. I would have did that different. I wish they would have. I was always saying that when I was watching everything from commercials. Well, not The Honeymooners or The Odd Couple, because they were perfect, and that starts getting hushed because that was perfect. But everything else, I was like, I could do that. I could do that. So it was natural that she then said, we're going to acting school. And once I got up there, she's like, and now you have to take your little money that you know, whatever allowance, and get you some headshots and send them out to all your agents and all the agents and get you an agent and everything. So it was really, you know, my job to pursue it. more so than, all right, I know what to do. Boom, bang, boom. She was like, go to acting school, see if you really love it after putting in some hard work. And then once you put in some hard work, take your own money and invest in yourself and see if you still like the shit. Right? Well, that, like, okay.
That sounds really smart. Like, she was like, try it out first. But the fact that she trusted you enough to give you that shot to try it is a real sign of faith.
Yeah. And the same with art. Like, you know, when I said that was the ticket, she was like, okay, let's go. Let's see. How you do. Try it all. She always encouraged me to try anything you want, anything I wanted, try it. You know, go for it. Just don't sit around and wait for something to happen. Go out there and get it, because you can.
Now, when you were younger, you said you were watching shows and thinking about how you would have done things differently. Was it just like instinctually you can just sense a false note? Was it something in the storytelling that you're able to just read that other people may not be able to read?
Yeah. It was almost exactly like a false note. Like, you hear a song and you hear, oh, he missed that note, or he missed that note. You see something and was like, oh, that would have been funny if, or that would have been better if. And then your own sensibilities come into it. And I may not have been right all the time, but I always believed that I could have did it better, or my take would have been different and interesting. It would have interested me. Maybe not everybody else, but it would have interested me. So I was hell bent on finding my way to that box so that then I could see, was I right? You know what I mean? And in a different world, and things before that gave me the place to show off and confirm or deconfirm. I don't think deconfirm is a word, but yeah, to confirm or defunct or debunk my whole theory.
So when you're acting yourself, being able to sense that false note, are you able to reflect and know if you're off on something? Are you able to hear it in your own self?
Absolutely, all the damn time. I don't watch my stuff. For a while, there was a rule. I watched a pilot of A Different World, and it was hard to watch. And I'd gone to classes where the class was, we're going to film you every day, and you're going to sit here in the class and watch yourself on TV at the end of the class, and we're all going to talk about it just to get you over that, I can't watch myself on TV again. So I thought I was broken of that. And then I saw the pilot of A Different World, and I was like, oh, shit. And from then on, I went to the movies every Thursday night at 7 o'clock, so that I was in the movies, away from the television, away from the phones. I didn't want to hear from nobody. I didn't want to know nothing. I just wanted to be occupied at the time the show was airing. And because I saw a lot of false notes, I heard a lot of, I call them ground balls. I missed a lot of ground balls. It was just stuff that I was like, I should have picked that cleanly and got the guy out. But instead, poof, Bill Buckner rolled by me. And next thing you know, bases are loaded and the pressure is on. So I stopped watching myself pretty much up until my kid was old enough to watch A Different World. And I started watching rehearsal. I went maybe 15 years without watching anything. And that became the rule. Like, once I do something, I give it 10 or 15 years before I watch. Because then I can go back fondly and be like, oh, that wasn't too bad. But if I watch it right after it comes out or right when it's fresh, I see too many holes. You want it to be perfect, or you just want it to be, you see where you could have been better. And I always saw that. And the great revelation for me over the last maybe 5 years is that I think I've gotten better as an actor and kind of arrived in my own mind so that I can watch and not be as mortified. And a lot of times I'm more interested in what, like, I've been lucky enough to be a part of some really good shows and some really good casts with some really good writers. So a lot of times I want to see what else is going on when I'm not at work. Like, I'm interested in the other half of the story that I'm not involved in. So I'll watch it. And then I come on and I'll go, oh, that wasn't too bad. And then I can get back to watching the rest of the show. Like, I can enjoy it as a whole versus min-maxing and just picking myself apart, which I used to always do. And now I think the last three gigs, I've been able to sit and watch it multiple times. Like, yeah, this is pretty good. But look at the rest, like this Moonhaven. Listen to Ayala, the way she talks, the way her moon speak is so dynamite and dominant. Yeah, they're all so good that it's fun to watch as a show. And then, oh, I'm in it too. And I wasn't too bad. And I didn't drop the ball. Yeah, it's a weird existence.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing because the character of Dwayne Wayne on A Different World was so popular, so well received. It's an amazing thing. Like, the audience bought it so well, but you are on the sidelines going, I definitely foul tipped that one off. I shouldn't have done that. This one was a bobble. And, you know, that's kind of an interesting. So what were you seeing you think that the audience wasn't seeing?
For me, it was sometimes I felt like I was pushing too hard. I was really nervous. So, the first thing you learn in acting class is whatever you have, use it. Mm. Whatever's there, use it. If you fight against it and you try to act cool, because scripts is some cool shit, and you're supposed to deliver it cool, but you're nervous, you better let that nervous energy work for you. Mm. So being nervous, you know, there was lots of hands. it's for me, I always wanted to go back and watch the shows and go, okay, kids, acting 101 here. This is a nervous actor. When you see him talking, he's doing all of this and something like this, and he's doing all these, like, he's miming. That guy is nervous. I'll calm down. It might take until the middle of the second season, but this whole first season, it may be a wash because I'm really nervous. And I wasn't nervous every second on set, but there were times where just the excitement of it all pushed me, and you gotta let it go. You gotta ride with it. That wave took me to some place that I wish I would have, I would have bent it and brought it back around and been like, okay, this is more grounded, and this is where I'd like to be. But sometimes it just pushed me off into something crazy. Like, what am I doing? What am I doing? There's a lot of that.
So now that you're in Moonhaven, do you find yourself still having that same nervous energy when you're in a scene? Can you see it?
No, now. I'm 57. And I have a little trick. Like, I've always been really good at remembering lines. I usually read the stuff and then I pick it up instantly. Read it once or twice, and then the sitcom, you rehearse a lot. Mm. You rehearse all week. So there was no ever drama about remembering lines. Sometimes you flub a line because your mind is moving faster than your mouth, but there was no real worry about that. And as I got older, I realized, I don't really need to know the lines as much as I need to know what I'm talking about. Mm. And if I know what I'm talking about, the lines will come. And it's usually, if it's well-written, it'll make sense. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? That's basic. But if it's well written and you know the character and know what he's about and talking about, then when your scene partner says something, your response will be something very close to what's written. Mm. And then with a glance or I missed a word. Oh, okay. Now I got it. And it's weird because it locks in. It's almost like it just, Dominic will say his line and I'll be thinking, and I'll listen. And then my response will make perfect sense because of who I know Arlo to be and how I know his response would be, what he's talking about, where we're going in this scene. So those scenes are all for all the stuff on Moonhaven. And plus, we're talking a different strange moon slang, that I love. So some of that was, I wanted more of that. I wanted to say more of the strange words like noggin, swirl, and tread feel, and nay, and all of that stuff. Niga, all those words we have are so fun and so like you feel like they mean exactly what they mean, even though they're not the same in anything that we would know as Earthers or as, you know, real people.
Now,
but when, yeah,
when you're in the scene with Dominic, you're about to do the dance for Bella. How badly did you wish you got to complete it? Where, like, when you think to yourself, can I just have one shot at doing the dance?
I literally learned, like, I didn't know all of it, like all the way through, because it's, yeah, as you see, it goes on for a while. Once Elna does it, once little Martha does it for, it goes on for a while. I knew that I had about half of that dance down that I could have, because they didn't tell us how long they were going to let us go.
Oh, really?
so we had to be somewhat prepared. We knew in the script we were going to get interrupted, but you know, how long are they going to let us go? And so I was ready. I really wanted to at least get a couple of movements in.
Like, right.
And they were, yeah, one, two, and they were like, stop. It's like, wait, we got the first and second movement, and then that was it. And I was kind of like, it was cute, and it was funny, and it was perfect timing, because she was, you know, Bella, Emma's character was mortified. So yeah, she needed to be rescued, but I was prepared to do about half the dance.
Well, I was bummed out because it looked like you and Dominic were in perfect synchronicity. I was like, they got this.
Absolutely. And we didn't rehearse together with it. Like, we learned to dance together a little bit, but then we never got together and were like, oh, we got to work on this dance. We're going to just dance them all. Because he had other dances where he had to really kind of get into it.
Mm-hmm.
But we never got together to perfect it. We just, once it was time to go, we just bang, we were in sync. Like,
season two, it has to happen in season two now.
Absolutely. Roisin was our choreographer, and she was fantastic. She choreographed a lot of movements in the all the movement pretty much in the show. And she said, we're going to get you a dance. We're going to get picked up. We're going to find a dance for you. I was like, okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So when you got the role of Arlo in Moonhaven, what were you told about Arlo, and how much of it were you given a sense of where his character arc was going to go?
Peter, like, when I first read it, you know, Paul does most of the talking in that scene. And I was like, oh man, all right, well, you know, okay, I can fit in. And then Peter wanted to send me the script. Peter Ocko is our creator, writer, executive producer. And he sent me the script, and then I read it and I was like, this is just so good. I didn't really care about how much I said or didn't say. I liked the idea so much that I knew I wanted to be a part of it. And then I think at one point, the deal was going to be like a one-year deal where, who knows, we'll see what happens next year with Arlo. And then Peter talked to me some more. And then once we had our second meeting, he kind of felt like, you're a Mooner. You get this. You talk it exactly the way it's supposed to be talked. We're gonna rework that whole thing. So Arlo kind of grew from that once he had me, and then he started writing towards me, because I think at the time when I auditioned, there may have been two episodes written, and then he had to do 3 through 6. So then he started, once he knew my voice, then he started writing to my voice. What was I told? I was told that he was kind of like the best friend that Peter had in college. Like his writing partner, like, you know, they loved each other, and they weren't ashamed of it. You know, it was complete and just unfiltered, uncensored. They just loved these two guys that had each other's back and cared about each other. And I was like, I can do that. I mean, it goes right back to Starsky and Hutch for me. Like, here I am, detective, kind of buddy cop. We just 180 years in the future on the moon. But yeah, so I was thrilled. You know, I know he was a bit of a dreamer. I think we came up with the fact that he was a dreamer once we got there and started rehearsing. Because all of the Mooners kind of identify as a seeker, a dreamer, a creator, all these different things. And for Arlo, they were like, what do you think Arlo is? And I was like, I'm not sure. And director said, he's a dreamer. He's a storyteller. He's, you know, he's a little bit out there. And I was like, oh, and that helped me hone right in. Mm. Too. That was Danielle and Bridget Savage, including our directors. That helped me hone right in to how I was going to play and how I was going to be and everything with Arlo.
You know, what I love about Moonhaven is that, like all great sci-fi, that is a show of ideas. And I think mm-hmm. all great sci-fi is one of ideas and concept and allegory. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. with Moonhaven, the whole idea is that it exists as an Eden. All right, but obviously mm-hmm. there's a murder in the first episode. It's definitely flawed. Now, when you're approaching it as Arlo or as the actor within it, are you approaching it as if the concept of Eden is flawed or that humanity itself is flawed?
As a Mooner, as Arlo, humanity is flawed. And we're to save it. We are the last hope. Like if we can take this culture and implant it on Earth, and the people on Earth live the way we live on the moon, then we can give them the IO, the system that'll completely save the Earth, and everyone will live in harmony. So as the Mooner and as Arlo, he believes that humanity needs us, you know, at this point in time. He's true moon. He believes 100% in the cause and in his purpose, which is we're just here to make sure that the Earth makes it, the Earth comes back to its, you know, to its full strength. So I brought in 100%.
The other concept I think in Moonhaven that I think is very interesting is the idea of the bright, which is a drug mm-hmm. used to soothe grief. Mm-hmm. The word they use is I don't know if that's the dreadful, but basically the sadness. Now, mm-hmm. the interesting thing about that is that is it good or healthy to avoid the grief, or is that actually doing more damage by avoiding it than if they had just let the person work through it, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there's definitely points on both sides. As detective, we love the break. So that's our job, is to make sure the trauma you just experienced, you don't suffer too much, that you regain your balance. Because if you're out of balance, then I'm out of balance. So we are all one, and we have to take care of each other. And some people might go too deep into the dark with the loss and not maintain their balance and their joy. Mm. So I think, you know, I can only speak it all though. I think it's perfect. It's the perfect solution to, you'll still remember, but the pain will be softer. Mm. You know what I mean? Like he said, slide over it like ice. Like, yeah, it'll just ease the blow. Instead of us running around trying to figure out who done it and why done it and blah, blah, blah. Mm. No, the most important thing is you and how you're dealing with what you just experienced and us getting you back on track and in balance with and in harmony with the rest of us.
But basically what you have is with Arlo, there's a question of his ability or experience as a detective in an Eden where there probably isn't a lot of crime. So when you're performing the role, you think to yourself, he is a detective, maybe not overly experienced because there's not a lot of things for him to do? Or do you think to yourself, he's been around, there's got to have been other things for him to have seen and stopped?
Absolutely. Our detective bit is pretty much we point our chancellors, and we push a button, and it tells us everything. There's no detective work. We like, how long was she dead? Who cares? Like, yeah, I don't know. Whatever you want, like
right.
I push a button and it tells me everything. So dealing with crime as an Earther would is a challenge for Arlo and all Mooners, because that's not even the way we think. Our first concern should be, are you okay? you just lost your sister, you just lost your mom, you just lost something. Are you okay? But it is a little exciting to go out and actually do what we, because we read and learn and watch everything.
Right.
So we know about the earth, the ways, but we've never had a chance to practice any of it because it's not like that here. So here's an actual chance, which I think drives Arlo through the whole show, is the fact that, hey, I'm going to be Sherlock Holmes in this joint, and I'm gonna solve a crime the old way. Mm. And yeah, it's but he has no experience. He has no life experience with this. We don't witness murder or even that kind of stuff very often.
So Moonhaven is on AMC Plus. I know it got renewed from our second season. So when do you think the timetable is for us to catch the second season?
In a perfect world, it'd probably be next year this time. I'm sure, you know, the guys at AMC, they might want to, you know, get it out as, you know, keep riding the momentum. Mm. But I know that we shoot in Ireland, and it's we can't shoot there in the winter. You know what I mean? It's a utopia. If we're freezing and blowing smoke out of our mouths and walking around in the rain and the leaves are brown, it's not going to be quite the utopia we set up in season one.
Mm.
So we might have to, you know, we're going to have to let the winter pass in Ireland before we go back and get back on it. But yeah, it'll be good when it comes, hopefully before, you know, September, before fall.
Well, Mr. Hartson, I look forward to seeing season two, and thank you so much for...
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. You too.